I'm talking to Howard Thornton. And where were you born and where did you grow up?
I'm born and bred in Inniskillen. Went to school in Inniskillen, Model Primary School, and on to Petora Royal School. So I spent all my youth up to the age of 18 in Inniskillen. I then joined the police, went through the police training in Inniskillen, and then I moved to various posts throughout the province. Initially Kilrae in South Derry, and then I moved to Clogher and Tyrone, and then I moved to Special Patrol Group in Oma, covering Fermanagh and Tyrone. I then went to Drug Squad in Armagh, so I was a detective in Drug Squad for a short period because I was promoted as an instructor to the training centre in Inniskillen as a law instructor. And from there I went to Station Sergeant Rosslea, where I was in charge for 3 years. And then I was promoted inspector to Carrickmore in Tyrone. And from there I went to ordinary duty as a duty inspector and prosecutor to Oma. And from Oma, I then went to Lisniski, where I was in charge of operational planning in the border area with regard to the military and the police operations. And then I moved to Inniskillen to take care of operations in the Fermanagh area, the greater Fermanagh area. I then was...
But just tell me, what years? What year was
right,
that?
Well, which year do you want of which one?
Well, for Inniskillen was your main... it's where you grew up. You knew it very well, too.
I was born in 1957. So I left school in 1975 and joined the police in 75.
So you saw a lot of the violence...
Well, my first memories of, because my father was a businessman, he and his brother had two businesses here in Inniskillen. One was in the very centre, just beside the town hall, which was a supermarket. And my first memories of the troubles, or whatever you wish to call them at that time, was a civil rights demonstration in the centre. And I remember well, I was only 12, 13 at the time. And with regard to it, what the guy behind the microphone was saying, let's put Inniskillen on the map tonight, the same as Derry and so on. And as soon as that happened, we could hear windows breaking. Now, I had been down in the shop with my father in the evening because Thursday night was the night for stocking the shelves for the weekend. So I was assisting while the shop was closed. Staff were still working, you know, behind the closed doors. But then, after a few windows went Woolworths, Town Hall, the next thing was our windows went. And at that, then there was a bit of looting started. And the next thing I remember, I just lay on the ground, scared. But the army then started with like a riot squad chasing, and there was a car burnt outside been Easton's today. There was a car burnt there. There was another car burnt in Darling Street. And the crowd then made their way to the Sligo Road. And then police, over the next few hours, police were drawn in from all over to protect the town against any further rioting and so on. But that was my first memory, really, of the troubles.
Right.
As we knew it.
So what did that do to you? Is that the reason why you wanted to get into...
No, well, I mean, later, my father, along with other businessmen, challenged the local divisional commander of the police. He was a Chief Superintendent Robinson. And they challenged him in the police station that there wasn't enough security on the town.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the time that the bombings started. So he, quite wisely, as I would say, with a bit of experience now, said that he hadn't enough manpower to cover all this, and that he handed out applications for the part-time reserve. So my father, his brother, another businessman, and quite a few businessmen in the town, as well as clergymen, actually joined the part-time reserve to do beats round the town in the evenings and so on. And so it was actually through that connection, really, and the fact that because he was in the part-time reserve, our premises were particularly, specifically attacked by bomb. That really, I seen that we should really be doing something to protect the country.
So it would be one of my main premises was bombed as well.
Several times, yeah. Yeah.
And what was your father's name?
Louis Thornton.
And what was over the door? Was
it Thornton Brothers.
Brothers, yeah. Yeah. And that premises was just targeted because of his
targeted because of his membership of the part-time reserve.
Why didn't you join the reserves instead of going to the police? Or why did you decide?
Well, I got to know through his membership of the part-time reserve. And in fact, actually, my brother-in-law was a young policeman. Sister had married to a police officer. I decided that was the career that I should spend.
Yeah.
And I got to know it a bit through those associations.
Oh, I see. But did it give you, for example, I mean, you talk about being in the middle of Oma was, for example, that was badly bombed and hit as well, you know.
Yeah, but you know, it's like anything growing up, you know, one got used to it.
Yeah.
At home, there was many nights around Enniskillen where you could hear bombs going off at commercial premises, or, I mean, close to us was an electricity substation. And it became a regular pattern.
Mm.
And then occasionally there was fatalities and so on. And you know, there was a young policeman killed by a Thompson submachine gun on Belmore Street. There was a man I knew well, Calvin, that was under car booby trap at the back. So all that was happening around us. And so basically there was a genuine sort of fear at that time.
Even fear within the police force as well?
No, this is really before I joined the police.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
Of the general community of what was happening, and there was nothing was being done to stop it or whatever. So between all that, that's one that probably the reason I decided to join the police full time and make a career of it.
And so did you think that being in the police that you had that opportunity that you could?
It wasn't within my first year that a colleague was killed. In Kilray, there was only three constables, a sergeant, and three full-time reserve. And unfortunately, one of the full-time reserve was killed by a booby trap bomb.
Oh, what was his name?
He was Arthur Mackay.
Where was this?
That booby trap was Drumagarner or Drumsara Road in Kilray. It was actually the first time. What they had actually done was they had hijacked a car, left it in a reasonably nationalist area, and with regard to it, there was a plunger underneath one of the wheels. So whilst there was no bomb inside it or whatever, it was underneath it. And once the vehicle was being towed, the start of towing it away behind an Army Land Rover, unfortunately the bomb went off.
Yeah.
And he was blown in smithereens. So it was a harsh reminder of the reality of a close-knit community, how it was hurt, you know, by that death. And it was a big reminder to me of the real dangers and death wish from certain parts of the community.
And this is it. You were in the community with them. You know, people were there, you know.
Yes, but I mean, I had grown up in a very mixed. I mean, one of our shops where I would have done some casual work for my father was in a mixed community.
Yeah.
Totally mixed community where everybody knew everybody, and Enniskillen was that way. Mm-hmm. But the problems I didn't think came from really Enniskillen, but came from more the border area or across border. And it was a dreadful time for all. Not just the Unionist or Protestant community, but for the Catholic community as well. So with regard to it, I had then to deal personally with the second murder of somebody I knew very close within my first year as well, who was Winston McCaughey, who was a UDR man, who I knew extremely well in Kilray as well. So just in that first year, you know, there's two people I was very close with that had been killed.
Where is Kilray now?
Kilray is South Derry.
Is in South Derry.
Yeah. So South Derry was one of the worst areas in Northern Ireland at that time. This is the mid-70s.
Yeah.
Because McGlinchey, Millen and Hughes would have been the main terrorist.
Yeah.
From Ballaghy area.
And then you were brought down to...
My father died unexpectedly. He was only 54. And because I'd left my mother on her own with a younger sister who was at school, I didn't ask for the transfer, but they transferred me closer to home to Clogher, which was in 25 miles of Enniskillen. So I was sent to Clogher, but I only spent about 7 months in Clogher. But again, that was my first time border policing.
Okay, and did you experience any problems doing that?
Or? No, I mean, the main issue then at that time was fatal road traffic accidents on the main A4 and part of the A5.
Yeah.
It was terrible, you know, 4 fatal road traffic accidents. But, I mean, there was incidents.
Yeah.
But, you know, nobody had been killed in that period of time. So, you know, we were obviously fortunate over that period.
But that was a kind of a breeder, really, from what you had.
Well, it was, but because you were on the border and because you weren't that far from Monaghan.
Yeah, or you were always on
you were always on the alert and cautious about calls and so on. But then I moved to OMA Special Patrol Group.
Explain that. What exactly does that mean?
It was a unit. It was based in the army camp in OMA. About 30 officers. And we would have taken on the more anti-terrorist work within the whole area. And the riot, you know, public disorder and so on. So we would have come together with other units for big days where there was potential riots or whatever. So we were really the reserve, you know, for the province, along with other units based around the province at that time. But there you were patrolling areas like Clady. You were patrolling Strabane, you were patrolling the border areas around here, but really not the day-to-day policing. It was mainly anti-terrorist or public order work.
And how good was your intelligence then?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say because you never know how good your intelligence has ever been. If you had fantastic intelligence, nothing would happen. But obviously things happened.
Yeah,
and we would have been called to the scenes of all the murders that took place at that time in Tyrone and Fermanagh.
But could you predict these? Were you on top of what you were doing?
No, I mean, how can you be on top of it? I mean, as I say, if you had the intelligence, it wouldn't have happened. So it happened. So there wasn't... obviously, there was some intelligence about some things, but regard to these murder scenes, and there were many of them in that period of time...
But that was through the 80s, is it, or into the 90s?
That is early 80s, so it is, late 70s, early 80s. And mainly bus drivers, people isolated near the border, farms, that type of thing. I mean, some cruel scenes, you know, and... I don't really want to go into sort of the memories of that, but it was heartbreaking.
But what did that do to you? Did it say, oh, we get those?
No, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I mean, Fermanagh has been different to any other county, I think. Fermanagh here, we've had a lot of young unionists who did not join any paramilitary organisations. They never strove in Fermanagh. People did the honest, decent thing, and they joined part-time security forces, whether it be UDR or part-time reserve. In other words, there was a code of conduct to the law. And with regard to it, you don't have these sectarian killings of any significance in Fermanagh, not like you had in Belfast or any of these other more extreme areas, but we suffered just probably more.
And why not that reprisal? Why not?
I mean, I go out and
be aggressive towards.
No. I mean, to be perfectly honest, you know, to do that is only to actually provoke more retaliation. And, you know, these things should not have been happening, but there was no way that I or people around me would have gone out to take life.
Yeah.
No, you know, it's not. Except you were saving your own life or you were saving the life of others. No, definitely not.
And the when you were down in Rosslea, isn't it?
Rosslea was a dangerous period because historically that would be Monaghan Pyre area.
And when were you there now? At that
82 to 85.
You were covering all of that area?
Rosslea, southeast from Monaghan.
Yeah, and that, as you say, that was the worst of it.
It was the cross-border element, really.
Yeah.
And it was the Monaghan-based group that were one of the worst groups, you know, with regard to death and destruction, Seamus McIlwain and people like that.
And were you able to, you couldn't have identified them because it was pretty hard to.
It's cross-border. I had a very good relationship with the people of Rosslea, personally. I really had. And if there was no troubles, I would love to finish my service in Rosslea. They're a decent people.
But it wasn't them.
The ferocity was coming from across the border. And on the runs, based in Monaghan and the likes. And they were dangerous. They were fairly professional terrorists and major incidents. So my time in Rosslea, there was several attacks and so on, and near misses, but fortunately I didn't lose anybody. I was fortunate.
And how many were you responsible for when you say you didn't?
Well, you had the military co-located with you, and I suppose there would have been, at least a platoon based with you, and police-wise, probably about 20 officers or whatever.
So were you sergeant at this stage?
Station sergeant, yeah, in charge. Yeah.
And did that give you a responsibility that you felt almost, you know, that you were in charge of these people's lives?
Oh, of course. I mean, when a report came in, you had a sixth sense. You had to have a sixth sense.
Mm-hmm.
You had to think terrorist. And you had to think, what are the potential dangers with this? I remember one where, and I don't want to go into names or whatever on this, but I remember where a burglary took place in a remote area. And I knew the owner fairly well. And he rang in, and there was something wrong about it. You get a feeling, and with regard to it, it ended up, we waited, and he was quite happy until we got helicopters and some military support. And actually, there was a landmine just down from his premises to get the police cars going into the burglary. So those incidents, you had always to think, what are the dangers? What are the potential?
Yeah.
And you had to think of saving lives as well as conducting your police work.
Well, can I ask you a question? Which I've interviewed quite a number of people in that area, and the Robinsons, who live right on the border there, close to
is that the Robinsons of Maharvili?
Of Maharvili, yeah. And so they would say that they would ring the police, and the police couldn't actually go down to the house.
Well, it depended, because I mean, you had to think, is this a come on? And you had to think, can I approach this in another way that they don't expect? So, I mean, you were dealing with full-time terrorists who had all their time to think and plan out and plot. There have been other incidents, which I can't mention, where they were trying to suck us in. And we didn't get sucked in, but we were fortunate. You needed to be lucky all the time.
Yeah, and that's the situation that I felt, that you had to think, you know, is this going to be a trap?
Correct.
Am I going to walk into this? Correct.
What do they expect?
Yeah, and Nicholson is another farmer on the border there, and he said that you were up the road in a checkpoint, but you had to come down in the evening to bring him from the house to the sheds to his cattle, that his life was that much in danger.
Yeah. I mean, it was terrible times, and I don't think that anybody really appreciates the stress that people lived under along the border. And to be perfectly honest, these boys were crossing over the border, and it seemed that nothing was happening to them in the Republic of Ireland. They got free passage. And, you know, so there was no will from the Republic of Ireland to do anything about them. So in many of these incidents, what you actually got was the car burnt just on the border. And, I mean, away they went with their guns and everything else. So there was no deterrent. And I still to this day would have strong feelings about what was taking place in the Republic of Ireland at that time, that they were allowed to act with impunity.
Do you think there might have even been support?
No, I wouldn't go as strong as that, no.
But they had free passage.
There was a free passage, and there's no doubt about that. I mean, the time I was in Clogher, I came across a friend who was badly injured and one killed on Main Street in Auchnacloy. And the sergeant from Auchnacloy and I footed it down towards the burning vehicle on the Ravella River Road. And, I mean, they just had their cars parked on the other side and drove off after they'd done the killing. It was as blatant as that. And nothing was being done in the south of Ireland to stop this. So we were very isolated, and the people living along the border were very isolated, and a lot of them sold up and left because they really didn't have the security.
And are you saying that you were actually not able to provide that security?
You cannot risk people's lives continually. You have to do it from a different angle. And if you don't, what you're actually doing is putting your own men and females to the slaughter. So you had to think about everything. You had to program everything. You had to be cautious, but you also had to carry out your job. So there were some chances you took, and there was others you didn't take. You took the more cautious approach.
And how close were you yourself to being a victim?
Well, let me see. Well, I was mortared in Carrickmore. So a mortar landed a short distance from me. But luckily I was behind a wall, so it didn't... And there was an assassination bid on me at one stage, actually across the border.
Somebody.
I was on official business, and basically we were locked up for some time. And
What happened?
Well, obviously, some intelligence somewhere had come in that our civilian car was to be attacked on the way back to Northern Ireland from an official meeting. So, I mean, no matter what precautions, there was so much security on our route back with task force from the Garda, with British Army, with helicopters. We actually got back safely, but it was some time before we actually made the journey back. Well, I can't go into that. I mean, obviously, we had meetings and so on and so forth.
But was there that communication with the Garda forces? Yes, there was a degree of...
And some of the Garda force were absolutely brilliant. And, you know, but with regard to it, you just never knew what... So we stopped the cross-border meetings actually after that. And Bobby Kennan would have been killed, and one of our local men here, Chief Superintendent Breen, were killed in South Armagh on such a mission. And so we stopped all that. And
Jack Fadden, who was a sergeant in the Garda force, his man was killed as well.
Don't get me wrong here.
No, but
the Garda are policemen. First and foremost, they're policemen, same as ourselves. But at times there was political pressure as what they could do and what they couldn't do. And that was quite obvious, serving that period of time along the border and in operations and so on and so forth. So that's been regrettable, because if there would have been greater cooperation politically, I don't think a lot of the people would have died. Mm. Or there'd been far greater deterrence to acts taking
place. And that's sad.
Yes, it is.
And so when it came to, the people that you knew and you knew very well were killed.
Yes.
And did that give you
an
anti-Irish feeling?
Not an anti-Irish feeling. An anti-terrorist feeling. Because I was growing up with Catholics all around me. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any problem with Irish nationalists or people from the Republic of Ireland. My family's originally from the Republic of Ireland.
Oh, where?
Leitrim.
Leitrim?
Yes.
And why did they move north?
They moved on the border.
When the border changed, came into being.
Yes.
Yeah. For economical reasons then, for...
I honestly don't know.
Because a lot of families moved.
There was,
for different reasons,
But with regard to it, I have no animosity towards nationalists or whatever, none whatsoever.
Were you born Church of Ireland?
I was born Church of Ireland. But a religion, from a sectarian view, was never forced upon me. I mean, I wasn't in the Orange Order, I wasn't in anything. We relied on Catholic customers just the same as we relied on Protestant customers. There was no...
I see.
That's the way I grew up.
And was it your grandfather who moved north from Leitrim?
It was, yes.
And what was his first name?
Johnny.
Johnny. And did he have a farm down there?
Yes, the Farnet, near Mohill.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I visited the home place.
And have you still relations down there?
Yes, we have, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so we have.
So you have a connection?
Oh, of course. And yeah, I have a Dublin connection.
Do you feel Irish yourself?
If I'm watching rugby, I'm Irish.
Yeah.
I'm generally Northern Irish, but I have obviously Irish in me. You know, I've grown up in a border area where everybody's 50-50 and so on. So and everybody gets on, and I have Catholic friends to this day, and there's no problems.
Do you think this war, do you call it a war, or do you call it the Troubles? Or
it's just a terror campaign.
To do what?
To beat us out of it. When I think back on some of the incidents that have happened, it wasn't all security forces, it was a degree of genocide, especially in the border areas.
Do you really believe
of
that?
Of course I do, because I can give you examples. Whenever you...
Go on, give me an
example. Ross Lay, we had Douglas Deering, a shopkeeper, Protestant. I think he was Baptist. Devoutly religious man. They came in, just shot him dead in the shop. He had no connection to anything except the church. Why was that done? What it was trying to do was to drive the Protestants that were left in the border away from the border. And in many cases, people did leave. And some I know went to Scotland to live because they couldn't get peace. Take King's Mill. I mean, what was King's Mill all about? It was killing Protestants. So there were certain sections of the IRA, and I mean, even your man, the ex-commander that died there a long, short time ago, that was the commander down south. Remember, he turned.
Jerry.
Yeah. He killed the detective in Nanoma, but he also was involved in the Clocher attack where Eva Martin was killed.
Yeah.
And he suddenly realised that this is sectarian. It's nothing to do with nationalism.
Yeah.
And that's why, according to his book, he turned.
Yeah. And the so now we've, you know, we've had peace and we've moved on. Do you think there's still an underlining trouble there that's ready to
walk
again?
You see, I mean, I'm a counsellor now.
I know that, yeah. We'll come to that too.
Yeah. And occasionally, no, not very often, I get the IRA stance in the chamber. And it will never go away. And unfortunately, the young have been brought up in a culture of pro-violence and supporting and eulogising about terrorists who have killed many people. And that cannot be good for the future.
Well,
that eulogising and...
Yeah.
I had a run-in with the present chairman of Fermanagh Council during the summer and was on television and so on about it.
What was his name?
That was, what do you call it?
Thomas O'Reilly.
Oh, no, not Thomas, no. Stephen from Trillick. The current chairman. Chairman, sorry.
But
with regard to it, I mean, he came out when he took over the chair last June. And he wouldn't condemn the Enniskillen bombing, knowing that it was coming up on this anniversary. And he also eulogised about Seamus Michael McIlwain being his hero and about how he had progressed peace in Ireland.
Well, so none of this is
I mean, how is that modern thinking, you know?
Yeah.
And even to come out with that, there is so much hurt caused by words. And I mean, it's like Barry McIlduff, that Carrickmore, former Carrickmore MLA. That's the way, behind the scenes, that's what's in their hearts, where they are eulogising about incidents and their martyrs.
Can I ask you, so, when exactly did you join the council?
I joined the council, this will be my fourth year. So,
why did you put yourself?
Well, I mean, I left the police, and I actually went to work for the European Union. I was in Bulgaria for 2.5 years as an advisor pre-accession on justice issues. And I came home, and I'm young. I became a guide in the National Trust.
Yes.
And so on. And then the opportunity arose, and I stood for council. Unfortunately, at that time, I took cancer.
Yeah.
And so I didn't get in the first time around, but I really wasn't well enough. And so I stood again and got in, and I've been there.
Good. And are you with the...
Ulster Unionist Party. Yeah.
And... but with your experience and your background, it's lovely to see somebody like you in the council voicing an opinion as well, or having that voice.
I don't have any bigoted views, but if somebody turns around with a bigoted view which hurts a section of the community, no matter what section, well then I'll put them down.
Right.
Because there's no time for if we want to progress and we want to have a future for our young people. Because unfortunately, if we linger on the past, especially glorifying and hurting, well, we will never move forward.
And Bally, Galway, isn't it? Yeah. Ballygally is a place that was badly hit too, quite near.
Yeah, I remember that particular week. I was actually on night duty, the inspector in charge.
What week is this now?
Oh, don't ask me dates. It was, let me see, I was like more 85, 87. So it was about 88, 87, 88, around that period. No, I remember one night, unfortunately, a policewoman lost an eye down in Listenski. And the following night, we got reports of a bus having been blown up on the Ballygally Road. With regard to that, then I took a constable and we made our way to it after a few phone calls, and we realised it was the army bus from Listenally that had been blown up by terrorists.
Yes.
Now, what was particularly galling about that incident was it was in the middle of the country with no street lights, working by torch, at a scene where there were so many fatalities. So it's one that I'll always remember, the difficulties we had. And there was actually a young loyalist band that had come across it in another bus following on, and they were trying to assist, and others were trying to assist. But it was one of the nights that I'll never forget, in the fact, well, I mean, that was after I'd sort of left the station to go to it about 12:30 or thereabouts.
Were you the man in charge that night?
Yes. I think I left at 11 o'clock in the morning, so it was terrible. You know, bits of bodies and working by torchlight. It really was a difficult scene and one that I will never forget. I mean, as such, there was a couple of us that received awards from the chief constable because of our actions. But I must say that the firemen helped out, every emergency service helped out that night, and we set up a temporary mortuary and so on, but it's just one of those scenes, probably because it was in darkness in the middle of the countryside, with no street lights, that, so, you know, it's one of those unfortunate things, and you never forget.
No, indeed. When you were in the police or the security forces, were you in your town or in say
Carrickmore?
Would you be served in the local shops?
No, I mean, this was a problem. It was a problem for the local businesses because they couldn't be seen to be assisting or serving police or military. And they had been warned off. And in Rosslea, there was for a time Douglas Deering's shop was taken over, which was a Protestant shop, and you would have got served there. But you got minimal items. You didn't embarrass them or whatever. And but no, if you went into other shops, they would have said, "I'm sorry, we can't serve you." Now, when I was in Carrickmore, which was a much harder area, and whilst it was inland, not on the border, it was notorious Republican haven. And I felt for the local businesses because even you went into a shop in Carrickmore, the staff would leave and go out to the store.
Imagine,
they wouldn't even say that they wouldn't serve you or whatever. Yeah. So with regard to it, I mean, there was an awful pressure on local businesses.
Yeah.
It wasn't they didn't want to serve you.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to serve you.
Mm-hmm.
So it meant that, say, for instance, when I was in Carrickmore, I'd been in for a week at a time. You had to bring milk. You had to bring cigarettes. Anything you needed. And at times, if incidents were happening, there was one time I didn't get out for 3 weeks. Just non-stop in charge. But at that time, you were flying out your shirts to get them sent to your home to get washed and sent back, and they came back out by somebody coming back in by helicopter and that type of thing. So, I mean, there were difficult times. You lost part of your youth.
Yeah.
and you're growing up, because you were so, you couldn't leave the place. You couldn't go out in the town, you couldn't do anything. You were locked up, except you were out in patrol. So many young people of my age lost a lot of their...
Their
years.
It was living that life of fear. When it came to the stage later on, you took on a new job.
Yes, I left from an and Tyrone as such, and I moved to headquarters.
What were you doing there?
I was the only inspector in what was called security branch. Not special branch, security branch. And really, that was looking after the people under threat throughout the province. It was looking after buildings that were under threat, including police stations, courthouses, and other government buildings.
Well, you're quite a big...
I had a team working with me.
But you were head of that team, really.
I was head of that, looking after the physical and technical security and the security advice. But, I mean, I had a superintendent, I had a chief inspector, but they were less hands-on.
Yeah.
So it would have been looking after, if the threats came in against individuals or whatever, going out to them, talking over, seeing what we could do to help or
what
whatever.
What would you say to somebody who was under threat?
Well, I mean, whenever you're under threat, a terrorist always looking for the weakness, and the weakness will generally be either the home or travel to and from work, or routines in their life. So, in other words, if they go out with a gun to shoot somebody, they want to know they'll get that person at that place, at that time, rather than running about with guns, just hoping to get a target. So that was always the way. And so it was reducing their predictable patterns, changing times, changing venues, more or less making themselves as unpredictable as possible. And also providing, to a degree, some security measures at homes and businesses and offices and cases. And making sure that, obviously, with courthouses, police stations, it was making sure that we had standoff from vehicle bomb, you know, we had protection against rockets and so on and so forth. So it was fascinating. I mean, you dealt with all the politicians, all the judges, you dealt with those maybe not so high up in society, but who were under specific threat.
Mm-hmm.
So with it was a rewarding role in many ways.
I can imagine. And were you doing that personally yourself?
Yes, I was in charge. I had probably about 9 sergeants with me as well. We were doing that on a day-to-day basis. But on saying that, I mean, I've graduated with a master's in security management from Loughborough University, and so I have a special expertise in that security field as such. But it's always teasing out the most cost-effective measures to provide the protection you wish to protect.
And would you... It's interesting, because some of these people, I'm sure, would be so terrorised, so scared, so... Were you encouraging them maybe to leave, or were you telling them to stay? Or?
I mean, probably the worst I ever seen was actually the doctor in Rosslea. When I was station sergeant there, he wouldn't sign a sickness polling sheets, you know, that people were sick to get postal votes. And there was a couple of shots fired into a surgery, and he fled overnight. And I remember later having to pick him up at Larne from the boat with an escort down to his premises, where we had security on the whole premises.
Because he was...
And
he
the
was
milk
afraid.
Was still sitting there from months before. I mean, the smell in the kitchen and all that, it was terrible. But that was through pure fear.
Mm.
And he was foreign, you know, I think he was Pakistani or whatever, and he just didn't realise, by being honest and not signing these postal votes, which he thought didn't deserve to be signed, well, then it just upset his whole life.
Yeah. Amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Really. Howard Thornton, thank you so much for telling me your story. Thank you.
Okay.